Just a little bit of housekeeping while you're all getting yourselves organised and your technology connected. Can I remind you that if you have a speaker on your laptop, if you could mute your speaker so we don't get the feedback echo thingy happening from the voices in the Adobe room, that would be greatly appreciated. Also stops us knowing when you're getting your Skypes, when your mail has been delivered, when your banking is being done, and whatever else you're doing while you're pretending to pay attention to this meeting. Okay, it is the top of the hour, so I guess Mason will come in and make an entry, which is fair enough. You boys and girls will just have to decide how you treat him when he makes the entry, I suppose. But I am actually planning to co-chair is the word here, with Mason. Ladies and gentlemen, it is, what day is it? It's Wednesday, and this is in fact the meeting between, I don't know, some industry interested in domain names. I guess it's sort of got a bit of a demand thing to it. People apparently want domain names, and these people do something about it. Now, let's be kind, let's be generous. We're looking at some mutualisms, some opportunities. We have two things on our agenda, vertical integration and the education of and rights and responsibilities and the aspirational rights. And that's a bit of a blur between stuff we've been talking about in a whole lot of work groups. We've heard there's clear nexus between what industry would like to see and what we as the end user would like to see in clearly understood knowledge. So we've got responsibilities to keep you guys up with certain things, and you guys have some, we would like, think, responsibilities to, you know, keep us clearly and simply language understood on a few things as well. So we think this can be a partnership, and hopefully this meeting will be one of those steps towards a further development of such a partnership. By way of introduction, my name is Cheryl Langdon Orr. I am the outgoing chair of the At-Large Advisory Committee. You are being transcribed and translated today into three languages, You have, if you are using your headsets, you have English on channel 1, you have French on channel 2, and you have Spanish on channel 3. You also have a desperate plea from me and the hard-working interpretation staff behind us to speak slowly, concisely, and when you get energetic and, shall we say, a little bit passionate about what you're saying, try not to get too fast, because I'll have to say, whoa, slow down again. This MP3 is, like everything the ALAC does, made available in public and on our site, as will the transcript. So everything you say will be taken down and held against you. It's a bit of a problem for me if I don't know who you are, and Mason doesn't know all my lot, and I don't know all his lot. So what I'm going to ask most of you to do, unless I've actually said, Sergio, over to you, and therefore your word, Sergio, has gone into the recording, and so the transcriptors can put his name in front of that. If you have not been identified by either Mason or I when you get into questions and discussion format, can you please make sure you state your name? And if you've got a really cute, interesting name with 27 consonants and 5 vowels, could you spell it, please? At least the first time. Okay, I have filibustered till my co-chair arrives and he can now introduce himself.
Well, thank you for filibustering. My name is Mason Cole. I work for Oversea.net, a United States-based service provider and registrar. I'm chair of the registrar stakeholder group, and thank you for the invitation yet again to join you, and we're pleased to be here, and let us begin.
And to begin, Beau's approached me and asked if he could say something to begin with. Beau, I give you the microphone, and I assume this will be a fairly short something, will it?
Yes, very short. We need to add to the agenda an explanation or a discussion of RAA 3.7.7.3. Given this morning's discussions, we in the ALAC, I think, kind of misunderstood what it was all about, so hopefully we're going to have some clarification on that, which will be great, as my performance this morning was not particularly stellar, so thanks.
Thank you, Beau, and we'll put that in under education, shall we?
Sure.
Good. Excellent. VI. Some of us experienced it. Who wants to talk about it? Okay, there's a move to my left for us to move immediately to the next topic. Okay.
Seconded.
Go ahead.
This is McHaley. With all due respect, Cheryl, what did you want to discuss in relation to VI? What were your concerns?
Well, perhaps I should ask the next speaker.
Sorry, I wanted to just say that about 10 minutes ago, the GNSL Council voted to close the VI working group. So I'm not sure. I mean, I'm with McKaylee on this one. I mean, the working group's closed. This thing is put to rest.
Cheryl,
if you have concerns, perhaps we can hear them. But
yeah, that's what I was going to ask is, does the ALAC have specific concerns about what's about to happen with VI?
In fact, it's a very nice segue, and it's good to hear that they've made a decision one way or the other. I'm not sure how many people will think that's a good decision, but it is good to hear a decision has been made. I think what you will hear from us is very much what you heard from us during the VI work group. So we can just say, insert here the sorts of concerns consumers were saying they had about establishing trust, gaming, what's happening to our data, etc., etc. Now, we know the compliance aspects involved in what is going to be the new regime. And from a partnership potential point of view, what we would like to do in educating the end user of domain names and ensuring, may I use the word best practices in this room, or is this a dirty word? Okay, good. Best practices from industry is have some shared knowledge and agreement that these things are good to do. You're all white hat wearers, or maybe various coloured hat wearers, but, you know, you're not the bad guys. You wouldn't be in the room if you were the bad guys. It's in your best interest, with the exception of McKaylee, okay? With the exception of McKaylee, I admit. It is a joke for the record, please. It is a joke I just made. That In fact, you know, we know you all do the very best and want to keep people happy and are not into entrapment or anything else, but we need to be able to give landmarks and explanations to our people to help them have that trust develop. So from a VI point of view, let's look at that in under compliance and in under what it means. For example, many of our people, and I'm looking desperately to see more waving arms, that's a good way of doing it, either in the AC room or just do this and someone will recognise you. One of the things that we find constantly is that whilst all of us, fairly well enshrined in the world of domain names, most people don't know the difference between a registree and a registrar and a reseller. We got to go back to basics here. In Australia, for example, involved in the CC as I am, I'm often asked, you know, who should I get my domain name from? Well, luckily, I don't have to answer that question because there's a site, and it's a site run independently, and it's got a link to Oz Registry, which rotates randomly through everybody. But what they can do is they can get the whois information and check that it's their name, not some reseller or web hoster's name in it, right? And we educate the market to do that. And they have every reseller and registrar listed with a link to their site, with a short list of the features and benefits, with what they offer, with what the current price is. And occasionally we'll say, you know what? Maybe going for the reseller end, unless you know who it's a reseller of, might not be the wisest choice. That's useful. That's the sort of thing that I guess we'd like to see happen in some of the spaces that aren't just .au. Well, maybe I'm biased. Perhaps you should open it to the floor and see what the possibilities are in that type of thing. Because that then gives a benchmark to compliance. And we've heard from compliance when they've talked to us recently that they are being far more proactive but far more fair at the same time, and we want to see the feedback. Our complainants are getting feedback from them, and we think that this is starting to give metrics where we can see trust building and occasionally trust loss, and that's okay too, because you don't need people that aren't trustworthy in the system. So do I have anyone who wants to take the conversation further, or I can talk for the next 45 minutes? It's not a problem. Evan, go ahead.
Hi there. Evan Leibovich, Chair of North American Region for another few days. I have a question, I guess, that stems out of the confusion that I have when I talk in my circles and to the ALSs that were involved. When it comes to VI, it seems to be one of the very first issues on which people, the fastest issues to make people's eyes glaze over. In the case that a lot of people don't really care who owns who, as long as consumer rights are protected at the end of the day, and that you know, that there's various principles that people don't get shafted at the end. And at that point, in fact, people don't understand if they're looking at a computer model, and if you buy a Toshiba, you go to a store and you buy the Toshiba. If you want to go to Dell, you call them and you get it direct from the manufacturer. And there's a mix of models in play, and I guess there's a confusion and a lack of understanding that I'll freely admit to sharing myself about why that mix of models has such a hard time coming into the world of ICANN. Why it's not possible to have a world in which, well, maybe you have some TLDs that you buy direct and some TLDs that you go through resellers. You know, if you're going to fly on Spirit, you're not going to go through a travel agent. But if you're going on United, you'd have to go through Expedia or something like that. And so in so many other consumer goods and services, there's a mix of being able to go direct and being able to go through a channel. And why does ICANN have such a problem with having a mix of methods?
Elliot.
Yeah, thanks. I think it's a great question, and I want to lay it up against a couple. Elliot Noss from Two Cows, a registrar. I want to lay up your comments up against a couple of the things that Cheryl said, because they, you know, highlight a lot of the misconceptions. And I think, Evan, the simplest reason for why is because people who are resistant to either change or competition for various reasons are resistant to it. And one of the immediate places that they'll make recourse is consumer protection. So when the first go-around around registrars, you know, competitive registrar space came in 99, that was the incumbent argument, was we can't have all of these registrars with a low accreditation threshold. Consumers will be the big losers. You can trust us. And then, by the way, you have law enforcement and IP typically very happy with that outcome because there's one neck to wring for them. And it's a lot more complicated when they've got to deal with a range of people. One of the things that I feel very strongly about is that the competition that came in the registrar space, you know, the big winners by far were end users. Prices immediately dropped way down, and any of you in the room who had to actually register a domain name prior to competition will remember the series of painful emails and the court of blood that had to be passed to actually get that domain name. You know, so prices went way down and customer service went way up. And I really think that with what you'll see with VI will be broader competition and exactly, you know, what you're hoping for, that range. And consumers will get educated. I said, and I'll turn it over, said I wanted to lay it up against a couple things that Cheryl said. You know, there are two things that are, to me, common misconceptions in what you said. You know, unless you really know a reseller well, you know, be careful. And the second was make sure your name is there. So I want to share a small story from breakfast in my hotel the other day. I'm at a little boutique called The Arsenal, and, you know, so it's small place, maybe a dozen rooms. I don't know if one or two of you are there. It's all ICANN people. And, you know, lovely couple runs the place. After a few days, you get to know them. You know, we've now taken a bunch of meals together and dealt with some technical issues. And so the owner proudly says to me, you know, hey, here's these two young kids. They've just redesigned our website. $600, great deal. You know, take a look. Two young college kids, they've done a fantastic job. They're local. They're clearly providing a high level of service, clearly providing great value. In fact, it's Arsenal. They registered both Arsenal Hotel and Hotel Arsenal. You know, I checked. He didn't even know that. That's somebody who's taking care of the customer around the edges. I looked at the who is. It's in their name. Now, there's two things about that. Why is it in their name? It's in their name not to extort money from him, not to take advantage of him, but to simplify their relationship by managing the domain registration for them. And that is the bulk of the reason why that happens. I don't question whether there's problems or, you know, sometimes when that happens, but it's not automatic. In fact, it's the edge case. They are resellers who had the domain name in their name. And I would tell you that, again, in the vast majority of those cases, that's because there's a very close relationship, usually a high service relationship, between the supplier and the customer. So I think that competition always leads to choice, always leads to better service. Not saying in any way that that doesn't mean we have to, you know, we always need to be careful and build in all the protections. But in the end, the end user is the big winner.
I just hope the Arsenal Hotel makes sure that they do their either have an auto-renew going with these people or that those people stay in business for as long as they think they would need their name.
When I see him without them there, I will make sure he knows about it at a minimum.
But just to follow up, there's a part of my question that I didn't hear an answer for, and that is, are you guys in the room okay with the fact that there might be some TLDs that say, we want to sell direct, we want to do the Spirit Air model, and so they're not being sold. You're not marketing them. They're on their own. They're out in an island somewhere.
It's equal access, though, Evan. Right. So whatever they do for themselves, they've got to allow me to do. But I'll tell you what I've been telling new potential registrants who are interested in broad-based, you know, generic type names where they're going to want 200,000, 500,000, 1,000,000 registrations. What I'm saying to them, I want them to be healthy businesses. And I'm saying to them, you better expect to have a retail site because I need you to show me how to market your TLD. Don't count on me to be the source of all your creativity. And, you know, I love any fair fight. You know, and I think it's, again, it's I'm encouraging them to do it. And maybe I'm naive.
Olivier.
Thank you, Cheryl. Olivier Crépin-Noblon, Secretary of Urado. Great little story, Elliot. Just one question. How do you abuse that system? how can that system be abused? You must have worked it out. So how could that be possibly abused, and what steps can you take to
avoid
that?
Are you suggesting that Elliot is in the business of abusing systems? Because if you
not
are,
at
I
all.
Will shut you down
not
right now.
Not at all.
Okay.
But being in the business...
Let's be very clear, because it's going into three languages.
Of course. But all right. So being in the business of domain names, you must have looked at how bad people might want to abuse this and introduce safeguards regarding that. So,
do you mean you. VI when you say this?
Yeah.
Yeah. No, I just say, well, you know, Rob. I said,
yes, Rob, you.
Rob knows. Rob is.
And Rob for the record, there is no suggestion that yeah, Rob is it, either exploiting these
say
issues.
Say that because Rob is the smartest guy with the expiry stream and really, you know, was just.
Oh, no, I don't know about that.
Enough.
Well, Rob and Mason would like to claim
sorry,
that title.
Just to be clear, the question is. Is there more abuse possible with the board decision than if it went the other way? Is that the question, or how could it possibly be abused?
I don't know, and that's is why sorry, I asked the question.
Sorry, it's your question. What was exactly the question? Right. I'm trying to get this.
So the question is, with regards to VI and with regards to Elliot's story, are there any ways to abuse the system, and what safeguards are there to stop the system from being abused?
I'm not sure that whether you have 100% ownership or 2% or 15%, that there's any difference to the possible abuses. I do think that, I think earlier someone suggested why not have a registry being able to sell direct. I think I can tell you many ways to abuse that if that was allowed. So I'm glad that so far ICANN policy from day one has been there must be a registrar, they must be treated equally and given equal access. I'll give you an example. Company goes out and applies for .web, starts a registrar, starts selling them on GoDaddy, and a bunch of registrars gets to 10 million registrations, you know, very successful TLD, let's say, and then decides he only wants to sell through himself. So now you've got something that's used, you know, a whole platform of competitive registrars that, you know, really set the market, and they say, let's just stop all that, and now you can only get them here. If VeriSign did that, we'd all be screaming bloody murder. So I think... as you know, we didn't take a stand publicly on VI one way or the other. I'm happy that they've made a decision. I'm happy that the decision goes hand in hand, because I think the two things really do go hand in hand. With if you're going to allow 100% ownership, you have to allow equal access. If you take away one of those, my personal opinion is I'd rather have zero ownership if you're taking away equal access. So you know, I don't think many of my colleagues share that. But the two really do go hand in hand. So as long as you have equal access, I believe the safeguards are there, because you will create a competitive market and foster a competitive market. So as long as registrants have choice as to who they deal with as their registrar, I think that's the ultimate safeguard. You can say, I don't like who I'm dealing with, I'm moving. Take away that choice to a registrant and say you can only deal with this registrar or this registry, and you lose that safeguard. Does that answer your question?
I'm not sure if it answers my question, sure. But yeah, I mean, yeah, thanks. It's enlightening. Thanks.
I see Carlton. Go ahead, Carlton. Didn't James said? Yes. Yeah, go ahead, James, and then Carlton.
Thank you, Chair. I am probably known not to have been so bothered about VI at all, because I connect it to harms, having a sense of what the harm should be and what safeguards might be applied to limit or eliminate the possibility of harm. That said, I would like to have a feedback from the registrar community as to whether or not what is their sense of support for a registrant's rights and responsibilities charter, and how they see that as part of the new GTLD implementation process.
On the subject of registrant rights and responsibilities, I don't think anyone really has an objection to that. Are you specific to new GTLDs or just in general?
In general.
In general? I'm not aware that anybody really objects to that concept. Anyone?
Well, under the 2009 RAA, we're bound to have it anyway.
Yeah.
So the first document which we worked on basically pulls together the existing consensus
right,
policy,
right,
plus the various stipulations within the 2009 REA.
Yeah.
So we can't really debate that, as we agreed
yeah,
to.
Yeah, sorry, it's there.
Now, I suppose what Carlton might be pointing towards is an expansion of that further. And I started having I've had a couple of conversations with a few people, including Evan, yesterday evening, before we went off and had enjoyed ourselves too much at Dutch Hop. So, I mean, I can only speak for myself. I'm more than happy to talk to people as long as they're willing to talk to me in a reasonable fashion.
Rob and Tom wanted to speak here.
Go ahead.
Well, I was just going to make the point that of all the stakeholder groups that attend ICANN, on this issue, registrars are your biggest ally, right? We deal directly with the registrars on a daily basis. They put bread on our table. We would want their rights protected before any other stakeholder that attends ICANN. So I don't think you should see us as adversarial at all on that issue.
I'd like to think we won't be adversarial on anything eventually. Go ahead, John.
Hi, it's Rob. Rob Hall. I think it kind of comes back to the discussion earlier about VI. I think the most powerful document you have in terms of protecting the registrant is the RAA agreement with registrars. And that's why I think it's so critical that we keep that level there. And I think it's why the ICANN board said you must use registrars still, because they've created this level that they define our responsibilities to the registrant. If registries were allowed to go direct, you lose that level, which is why they said you can own one, but you still have to follow the same rules as every other registrar, because that is the ultimate protection for the consumer. Now, I know there's different groups trying to amend that. We also, in that document, have already agreed to any consensus policies within what they call the picket fence that get created by ICANN. So it is, in fact, a contract that says we don't know what's going to happen, but if the community comes together and agrees on a consensus policy, we'll abide by it. And I think that's the most powerful thing registrants have, is the fact that this registrar level does exist with that RAA contract. The thing to do is to work together to put into place those policies, because some of them are still undefined after years. For instance, we don't have a we haven't changed who is policy in years. We haven't changed the warehousing policies in years. We don't have a code of conduct. So we've agreed to work together in our last RAA amendments to create a registrant's rights and responsibilities document and be bound by it if we can mutually agree on what's in it. So a little different than Michele. We didn't agree to just take anything and make it part of our contract. We said if we can agree on what the rights and responsibilities are, we'll happily make that. Well, I mean, we actually already agreed that we would make that part of our contract. Is that fair?
Back to you, Tom.
I'd like to make another point about the harms in terms of vertical integration, potential harms. And it's really something I think all of ICANN needs to consider. When registrars were created, it was to give more consumer choice, because before you had a monopoly provider. I'm in favor of vertical integration, even though I'm not applying for TLDs, but I think it's right for the community. But one potential harm is that consumers will have fewer choices, because the registrar layer will start to consolidate. And so now consumers have fewer choices than before, because there's fewer people they can go to. And I think it's eventual, even though we have this equal access provision, at a matter of 10, 20 years, registries will be going directly to their registrars. That's inevitable. That will happen. That's a potential harm. I think it's going to happen sooner or later. The question is how long it's going to take. And the question is are you okay with that in terms of consumer safety, consumer choice? You may want to go there, you may not.
Elliot?
Yeah, I'm sure much like the ALAC, registrars often disagree. I, Elliot from Two Cows again, I would fundamentally disagree. I think that, I've been in internet services all of my adult life, really since the launch of the browser, and every single internet services market, whether it was as long as there's not a legal or a regulatory driver to consolidate, like there was in some broadband cases, becomes more and more and more competitive over time. The registrar market, you could look at it and on some numbers say there's been a little bit of consolidation, but really when you talk about from the customer backwards, the ecosystem of resellers and sub-resellers and types of resellers has just gotten more and more and more complicated. When I say complicated, complex, rich, varied in the choices that are available. So I just think that that'll continue. I think that when you have a choice of registries, you're going to have all sorts of different distribution models grow on top of them. Some of them will be trees, some will be bushes, some will be flower beds, but it's all a very rich ecosystem.
And consumers like choice. Alan, go ahead.
Thank you. I'm not quite sure why we're spending so much time talking about VI, since it's something we have absolutely no control of. It's been decided, and maybe we should spend a bit of time talking about things that we may have some control over. With regard to whether sometime in the future, registries are not required to use registrars, that's a bit of navel-gazing and crystal ball-gazing that I'm not sure that it's going to help us a lot. But I will point out that just because if a registry is allowed to sell their own domains and not provide equal access, that doesn't presume that they don't have to sign the RA on their own behalf and are subject to the restrictions and consumer rights associated with it. So the two are not necessarily separate. So they may be the sole registrar that is allowed to sell their own domains. Presumably it would still be subject to the same rules. In any case, I would suspect maybe we should go on to something that we can come back in 6 months and say, gee, look, we did something good by discussing it instead of rehashing something
chair,
which
Alan?
Is fixed. Pardon me?
Would you care to take the chair, Alan? Because at the half hour, we were moving to the second topic.
I'm sorry, I was late.
Thank you. Mason, do you want to run this next little shindig? We're looking on education, and we actually have a request for education to begin with.
Go ahead.
I can't educate me if I don't understand what the RIA 3.7.7.2 is.
Oh, that one.
So we're now asking for real-time education because we got it wrong, and we're sorry we got it wrong, and we're sorry that we don't behave nicely when we get things wrong, but there we go.
Okay. Actually, Tim, would you mind just giving the background on this? I don't mean to punt it over, but he led today's session.
Tim, so. Over to you.
Tim Cole with ICANN. I'm not sure my general counsel would appreciate me trying to interpret the clause in the contract for a group of people. Rob, you might, if you feel.
Mike.
I'm not going to interpret the abolition clause other than to say I think the misconception earlier was it's not about resellers, it's about privacy services, right? So it's about people that hold a domain in their name on behalf of someone else. And that may be a law firm, that may be what we call a proxy or a privacy service. I believe the clause focuses on that, so I won't pretend to interpret the meaning of it, but it's not about resellers. And I think that was perhaps some of the misconception of the earlier meeting, was it's not meant to, in any way, I don't believe, affect resellers. Is that fair?
Tim Cole again. one of the concerns that, for example, Wendy Seltzer raised was that she believes that registrants should have the right to keep their information private, and that this clause, which governs certain actions relative to revealing the information under certain circumstances, shouldn't be there at all. So since I perceived that to be perhaps closer to what people in the ALAC would prefer, it came as a bit of a surprise to me that you came out so forcefully against it. But I now understand that may not have been your intent.
Actually, our view on the privacy issues is absolutely bifurcated in the at-large community. It's not bifurcated in the ALAC, because it simply represents what the at-large community tell us to. But it is an absolute bifurcation, and I think we should probably go back to the very successful interchange that happened in the Mexico meeting, where we had the debate between Bo and Wendy. And, in fact, they didn't agree to disagree at all, but they did manage to see their way through, and, strangely enough, the majority at the moment of the representation on the ALAC and the regional leadership is more to the what keeps consumers safe in terms of able to, I'll use the word police, but it's really ensure compliance. Bo, have I mischaracterized that cruelly, and would you care to make any amendments?
No, I don't think you've mischaracterized. I just think we need to go basically back to the drawing board and reevaluate the statement that we made. And also, I think we should get, I mean, we have on the NOMCOM now, someone has been seated on the NOMCOM who is, you know, a renowned privacy expert who I don't necessarily think has as specific views of this, of these types of issues as Wendy does. So, you know, we need to get him involved right away.
Just for the record, that's Mark Rodenberg.
Mark
is not able to be with us. He's got something happening in Washington this week, apparently. It's a little something he's been working on for the last 5 years. He now belongs to us, so we might use him wisely, okay? Can we move on from that? More general education. Now, it's not educating us this time. We kind of think we might sort of get it, even though we get it wrong occasionally, and part of sharing and caring is helping each other learn. It's the education to our next lot. You know, we have Feedway out to get information to the edges. How are we able to, if at all, able to work together to get the information you want to have out to the edges? Because we want that. We want an informed end user of a domain name. I assume you want an informed end user of a domain name. Is there opportunity here? And that's why I thought, Mason, I might toss it over to you to run this and see whether or not, you know, it's your people. I mean, we're willing. We have access to probably put together, you know, education programs. They may not be glorious, but they do need to be accurate. If some of us are doing podcasts in the middle of Africa, well, you know, let's make sure it's the right stuff. Can we have a tacit, if not actual, work plan to kind of make that happen? It did come up in other work groups. PEDNA has talked about the need to get people educated about what expiry means, what auto-renewal means, what happens when and why and how. We, difficult groups that we are, want predictability. We want understandability, and we want to be able to trust, and that means knowledge. Help us get it to the edges.
Okay, look, if I understand what your desired outcome is, you're asking for our help in educating you and our customers about what their rights and responsibilities are specifically. Is that right?
I assume you're educating your individual customers. And that's great for those that have selected you guys that do education of customers. The people who aren't customers yet, for example, of any of you, mm-hmm. need to have resources, some knowledge, some what is a domain name almost. Now, we've got the user's guide. Hello. What are you doing back there? I'm just recognising James Little. Now, we have the domain, the internet, what's the beginner's guide to domain names? Thank you. It was something else last week. Do we have a copy of that? We have our first on in a series of things to go out. Mm-hmm. We'd like a next and a next and a next, and we'd like to work with industry on some of those nexts. And James is coming because he's been plotting, and I want to have this into the record. Thank you, James.
James. Hi, Cheryl. James Bladel from GoDaddy. And I'm just thinking through some of what you're saying, and I know we've discussed this in other forums and other contexts, and some of them involved beers or cocktails. But I think it's a good idea. However, I think that this group should probably think very carefully about how much involvement they want registrars to take in that area. If you're going to put me in front of people, potential customers or registrants who have not been exposed, I'm going to educate them to become GoDaddy customers. Okay, that's my job. Okay, so, you know, you may want us to contribute expertise, resources, or possibly volunteer some, hosting space and things like that. But I think that the at-large community really needs to take the lead on that rather than picking and choosing a few registrars to steer folks towards or away from different choices. Thanks.
Oh, believe me, we would not be looking at anti-competitive behavior or a competitive advantage behavior. We would want it very much the opposite. It's, do we have an ability to run drafts and things
like that? And it's not a nefarious thing. It's just that's kind of, that's how we're wired. Sure. That's why we exist. So,
I often wondered. Now I know. Michele, then Elliot? Yep.
Cheryl, I mean, we've discussed in various other fora initiatives that have been carried out in various different countries. I think you've referenced an Australian initiative, which was something that was run by AUDA, which is the Australian Registry. And the kind of thing that I would be very supportive of is something where it's either produced by ALAC or by ICANN and hosted or run by, you know, a trusted third party, as it were. Mm-hmm. Because obviously, I don't want James to get my customers, because they're meant to be my customers, not his. And Elliot's going to say the same thing. Mason's going to say, yeah, exactly, exactly. So, and then we'll have Rob who'll going to weigh in and take all our customers.
Okay, are you going to say the same thing, Elliot, while I stop laughing?
No, I'm you know, something that I've long that I long would have liked, I've spoken, you know, over the years to various ALAC people about, you know, is I'd love to for you guys to run a website that was a customer education site that you could push people to. I think where James is exactly right is in, you know, I think all of us would be happy to, you know, I think some of us would be happy to, you know, give input to the site. Hey, what do you think of this? And I know all of us will be happy to correct you if we think there are serious misconceptions on the site. But I want to, you know, I think Alan certainly has indicated a strong desire to, you know, be outcome-based around this and to see things move forward. So I'm going to give you a real easy suggestion to get yourself off the ground. Every large registrar runs some version of domain name 101 for their customers. So I will say on behalf of 2Cows, feel free to steal mine. You know, if you guys go to 2CowsDomains.com, you can't use our logos or, you know, you take out any company references. But, you know, there's our job at trying to educate customers. Go, you know, it's Creative Commons licensed. So, you know, go enjoy it. And, you know, at that point, I mean, one of the things that, one of the points I made in the earlier panel, you know, in reference to some of the intellectual property demands is that, you know, compliance is expensive for all of us. You know, you identified that, hey, you're the good guys or you wouldn't be in the room. That's expensive. We want people to be educated because it helps our businesses. It's a payoff for that expense. So,
indeed, and I know there was mention of code and or lack of code of conduct, and one of the advantages that some of us on the consumer end see of an industry-generated code of conduct that actually does talk to the end user in how it's generated and during the generation of it is that it does mean you guys can control those bad actors a whole lot easier and let us know when it's out of line. But you did start to do in early days of ICANN, but other things took over.
You know, there's a point on the code of conduct I want to make clear. I think it will you'll always struggle to get a very formal ICANN-approved code of conduct because of different business models. I mean, you know, good practice in Mason's business is very different than good practice in my business, and I believe the more formal you make it, the more watered down the product you end up with. The more it's informal, this is what ALAC thinks. You know, nobody can say anything about that. And as you say, you can, you know, you can reach down and educate it on that basis.
Okay, I see Alan, I see Mason, and I see Bo, but I also see Danny Younger on screen. Just before I go to Danny's question, then I'll take things in that order. One of the reasons we wanted to raise this was, of course, we do have an ability as the At-Large Advisory Committee to put forward a project such as develop a piece of education. But that goes into the general ICANN budget requests. Guess what, community? We would need your support for it not to be just seen as irreverent and not really required. So you would, in fact, perhaps need to say from your point of view as part of an ICANN community, yeah, we think this is a good idea. We think it does meet the strategic planning. And, in fact,
we support it in principle. Now, we may not get the money then, but we do need to remember that all budget aspects, and we don't have funds, are part of a community review. So doing this niceties, which is important to do, allows us to go in good faith forward, knowing you're not going to shoot us in the back. Not that you ever would. It would be the last thing any of you would ever consider doing to any of us. Michaeli accepted, and me. Okay. Danny Younger has asked the following question. In the .r... And my screen goes blank in perfect timing. That was true. It did actually go blank right then. In the .rf namespace, there have been reports that an ICANN-accredited registrar decided to register some 24,500 domains in its own name prior to processing the registrations of others, and then pull up those names for auction. In the view of the registrar constituency, are there any current rules/regulations/policies that would prohibit identical registrar behaviour during the new GTLD launches? Who wants to take that? Tatiana, the perfect, perfect way to answer it. Thank you,
yes,
Tatiana.
Yes, actually, I'm a representative of that registrar.
Say your name.
Yes, my name is Tatiana Hramsov from RU Center, and I'm a representative of that registrar. I wouldn't like to explain all situation just now because it's a big story about rules, about coordination center procedures and our decisions. But I think that regarding the education, it's very important to explain not, for example, to the local market, why the registrar do this thing or another, because it isn't the right view. There was a lot of reasons. And, for example, not native persons can't register .rf at all. Mm-hmm. How can we provide this service to them? And there was a lot of requests for trademarks owner from France. Mm-hmm. So it's very important to explain the situation, the procedure, the very understandable procedure to other persons, not only, for example, in Russia.
Thank you very much, Tatiana. And I would note for the record that, of course, Tatiana is one of the registrars that is always in the work groups and is a very effective part of making sure that the white hat community is as white as it possibly can be. And I would hate to think that there was any implied or other criticism of your registrar. Go ahead.
First, I want to say Mr. Younger seems to be mixing up a lot of concepts here, and I want to clarify a few of them. The fact that it's an ICANN-accredited registrar that did this in a country code is irrelevant. This is a country that sets its own rules for its own registrars. It has nothing to do with whether the registrar that did it is ICANN accredited or not. The second point he makes, so it may have been perfectly acceptable under those rules that the registrar did what they did, and I congratulate them. I mean, that's a business model we see certainly in ICANN. To answer the second part of the question is, I think he's asking both, is there any protections against this in the current agreements or the future agreements? In the current agreement of the RIA, I believe all registrars have agreed to abide by a warehousing policy for domain names. For the last 10 years, I believe this has been in the contract. And I'll get there. Sorry. The problem is, in the last 10 years, ICANN has never developed through a policy process a warehousing policy. So we've already signed on that we'll abide by one. ICANN's never developed one. So I don't think registrars feel the need to lead that effort, so we're not going to. The interesting thing, though, is even further from that, if Mr. Younger looks in the new, I almost call it a draft applicant guidebook, but the final applicant guidebook, is that is it really the FAG?
No, it's
sorry.
AG. We
AGP. Applicant guidebook, okay, sorry. Okay, whatever that thing is that they're talking about. There is a section that deals with a registrar being allowed to register names for their own use. And so there is a section, I believe it's in actually, Tim, you may know more than I about what section it's in. It's not, it's part of I think it's in the registry contract and the almost a code of conduct under the registry contract section to try and point Mr. Younger in the right direction. But it is there. There is a statement about it. There has been some concern about it because it's overly broad. It actually says, a registrar, it doesn't apply just to the TLD that the registry is running. So it says a registry can't register in its own TLD, but any other company affiliated with that register can't register in any TLD. So the example is if Microsoft registered .hotmail, they would lose the right to own Microsoft.com the way it's worded now. So there's been some kind of back and forth with staff on this saying, I think you went too big. So that there is a clause there that may get amended, but if not, it is absolutely in that new book. And I seem to recall in the original RAA agreement, also a clause, Tim, maybe you can help me here, about registrars only being able to register names for themselves for the purpose of their own business. Is that
correct? Yes. In the 2009 RAA, there's a provision that is attempting to clarify, appropriate versus not appropriate. Let me clarify. To assure that any names that a registrar would register would still be covered by a contract, because under contract law, a company can't enter into a contract with itself. So if a registrar is registering names, basically they don't have a registration agreement. So the 2009 RAA clarifies that and says it basically is acknowledging that you can't do that, but you can do it under certain circumstances for names that you use in your business, and that if you do, in those instances, you are actually entering into an agreement with ICANN that replaces the registration agreement that you would have with your customer. So it's just a way to make sure that, for example, a registrar registers a name and someone files a UDRP complaint against it, there's now a way for that to be handled.
Sorry, Tom, this is a follow-up, I assume? This is a follow-up to this? Yes, go ahead. It's a very effective mechanism to stop half the table talking. So seeing as the next two speakers are on that side of the table, Tom, if you will hold your thought, and we recognise it as a follow-up, and because the rest of that side of the mics are clearly off, Mason, guess what? You get to jump the queue.
Okay, that's okay.
Basically, we blame Mr. Cole. It is his fault to try and silence Tom. Tom, you are no longer silenced. The microphone is yours, and it works.
All right, Tom Barrett from Insorca. I wanted to point out that registrars have many different business models, and one of the newer models have been investors, domainers, who have created registrars solely to manage their own names. And I have no doubt we'll see new registrars come out for new TLDs that are for a single investor, and they'll be registering names on for just themselves. So how that runs afoul with a warehousing provision when they're buying names for themselves, I don't know how you reconcile that.
Tim?
I do think there is a distinction in the sense that there is still a registrant and there's a registrar. In other words, the registrar has a customer who appears in the whois, and it's a separate entity than the registrar itself. So, in fact, it does have a contract.
Is it required to be separate, or does the registrant have to be a separate legal entity from the registrar?
I think we have the agenda set for your next meeting, which is very good, and the education program will go on in all of our parts of our community. Alan, over to you.
I'm not sure if I'm answering in response to Danny's question or the new point the issue I was going to raise.
I would have thought you're asking your question, unless you have a desperate need to respond to Danny. Feel free if you're going to bring something new in, but...
The only point I was going to make with regard to Danny, there was a somewhat extensive discussion in the GNSO on this. And in this particular case he's citing, there is some disagreements at the moment whether what was done by that registrar was indeed legitimate or actually against rules the registry had in place. I think that's way out of our scope to try to arbitrate that or even discuss that. But certainly registries are in a position to make such rules if they wanted to. not currently specified in the applicant guidebook because of this particular issue being raised. Maybe it will be in the final version. We'll have to wait and see. The thing I was going to say is, with regard to education and an at-large or specifically an ICANN hosting of such things, at times registrars have received a bad reputation with respect to registrants and users. There's probably only one entity that has a worse reputation, and that's ICANN. ICANN has not provided a face or an image which is registrant-friendly. If you look at the main page, the place you have to click if you have a problem is under dispute resolution, which is not perhaps the way I would have phrased it. If you click that button, you immediately go to another site, internic.org, which from a regular human being's point of view, ICANN is saying it's not our business, it's Internic's. I think a site hosted by ICANN saying, you know, domain 101, here's how to get a domain name, and here are the pluses and minuses, and this is what you need to know, I think would improve ICANN's credibility and image in that area very significantly. So I think this is something that we can work together on, and it'll be a win-win situation for all.
Yeah, okay, Tim, I'll toss to you on that, but I would also note that we've heard many changes of planning and afoot. We do have the webinars, we do have a whole lot going on, and I would define most registrants as not giving a damn how to spell ICANN, let alone ever bothering to go to their place and space and try and navigate through it. Those of us who do know it can be done better, but I don't think man in the street knows how to spell ICANN, let alone worries about their website.
But registrants who look to ICANN for some insight have very often had a bad impression, and I think ICANN has heard, and
I am hearing and seeing examples of how this has radically changed. So credit where credit's due when it's due. Tim?
Yeah, I'm not going to defend the entire website and the way it interacts with, you know, how it functions today. But I did want to clarify make one distinction, and that is ICANN manages Internic. The Internic website was first established to be the registrant's resource versus ICANN, which was intended to be the industry resource as far as the way those two websites were set up and what they were intended to do differently. The Internic website has a whois lookup. The Internic website has a registrar lookup for registrants. The Internic website has, you know, many different kinds of conflict or dispute resolution options. So that is why they're directed there, not because it's another entity and that we're absolving ourselves of responsibility.
Tim, I understood that. I said the perception is to someone who isn't familiar with it.
Which is an opportunity for us because we now have something else to educate the end user about. Fantastic. Chapter number 3 on the big book that we're growing. Bo, you had your hand up. You're in the queue. Go ahead.
Yeah, this is something I said at the meeting earlier, pardon me for being repetitive, but it surprised, I think, certainly me and probably McKaylee, that when we were trying to do a joint working group or joint team on the RAA earlier in the year, that we, in order to actually do work, we had to have the RAA translated into English that everyone could understand, let alone the fact that there's no extant Spanish or English translation. So I don't know if that exists now, but as an outgoing member of ALAC, if there's nothing that I could ever, if the only thing I ever accomplish in 3 years is to get you people to put the damn thing online in a language that can be read, that's it. Is it up there? Is it in Spanish? Is it in English?
Heidi, I believe the plan was for it to go in multi-language. If that action item hasn't been completed, we will follow through on it because it certainly was the intention for the layman's guide to... No, not the RAA.
No, that's all. I mean,
you're talking about the plain English version.
The plain English version, yeah.
It was meant to be multilingual. If it's not out in the 6 UN languages, it is meant to be as far as I was concerned.
Great.
And it should be. And when staff find that it is, they will put it up as a link.
You guys weren't really involved in that
I think that's you weren't on that particular subgroup with the deliberations in the REA. One of the issues that that Bo and I were dealing with was that by their very nature, a lot of the documents within the ICANN world are very, very heavy. They're jargon rich and plain English poor. Cheryl and I have discussed many times in the past about, you know, the total lack of simple, clear English. Now, when it comes to something like a contract, obviously it has to be written in a certain way. However, if people could actually understand what the hell the damn thing actually meant, then this would probably reduce a lot of headaches for everybody, which is where this document that staff put together, we tried to put it together ourselves, but then realized that we didn't have the bandwidth and skills. And,
yeah,
you know.
I think we know all that. The question is, what Bo, maybe you should say, are you talking about, do you want the 09 RAA up and translated, or do you want the plain
English? No. This is a plain English version.
Hold on. Or do you want the plain English version up and translated into plain Spanish, plain Italian, plain French, all that? Is that your objective there?
I think that would be a great objective.
Okay.
Yeah. I don't know if such a thing exists as plain Spanish. It does there, but if there is, great. Right.
Okay, got it.
And my point was, that's the way it was meant to be, and if it isn't, we'll find out why.
If you look at the chat that Heidi just posted, it's she gives you a link and it's translated into 5 different languages.
So Bo, there you are. Congratulations, Bo, as an outgoing gift from the ALAC. It's been done.
Is it linked to from anywhere?
Now that would be useful.
Can it be found?
Let's go back to that rebuild and making a better model of the website. But, hey, at least the resources are there. We're ahead, okay? We'll start Twittering it to everyone. We'll just have a Twitter link. Mason.
So on the issue of education, I certainly think registrars would be... I certainly think registrars would be happy to help you with education. I agree with James Pryor that, asking us to author certain things or... You know, otherwise that it could be problematic for a lot of reasons. But when it comes to making sure that information is correct, I don't want to speak for registrars at all on this, but, you know, perhaps someone would be willing to donate some space on a server to help host some information that might be useful. You know, I think we'd be happy to do that. My own point of view is educating end users is far better than creating policy. So educating out in front, in fact, in several policy areas, we've proactively asked for an education effort, sometimes with the ALAC, as a way to mitigate whatever problem is perceived to be had. So I would like to see more of that approach personally.
And I think we have a very good agreement on that. That we're in rampant agreement on that. Now, unless someone else waves at me, I do. Okay, so then I have Darlene, and then I have Fatimata, and then I have the top of the hour. So I believe that will be it, ladies and gentlemen. Darlene, go ahead.
Three Canadians sitting together, it's kind of scary. I want to take it back to Bo's original question at the very beginning of the meeting on 3.7.7.3. I mean, I know that we all got it wrong, but I'm wondering, so what is the registrar's take on that?
That we got it wrong, or that they have a take on it?
That they have a different take on it than we did.
Well, I think, you know, we weren't involved in the drafting of it, but yeah, go ahead, Michele.
I'm not sure I understand the question, but I'll try to answer it anyway, because that's what I do. The 3.7.7.3 thing basically refers to who is privacy. It doesn't refer to resellers, which was what you seem to have understood it to mean. So let's say, for argument's sake, you were to register a .com or another GTLD with Network Solutions or GoDaddy or Enom or any number of those registrars, you could opt, in many cases, either for free or a paid who is privacy or proxy service. From my understanding, and again, I'm not a lawyer, the entire provision there is so that under which circumstances the registrar has to hand over the real contact details of the actual Now, this case, it wouldn't be registrar. I think it's the licensee or something. Lawyers can help me with this. They're all sitting here. So that whoever actually had paid for the registration, let's just say. But the problem for most of us, my understanding, the problem for most of us, for me personally, is nobody's ever said what the hell real evidence or actionable harm where it was, and it seems to be abused by IP lawyers.
Thank you.
Just to follow up from Bo on that, it's a very little one, isn't it?
There's a very little one, and that is that no one in the meeting earlier appeared to be all that happy with 3.7.7.3 anyway, so I assume it's going to be redrafted or the draft is going to be thrown out or, you know, Tim could speak better to that.
I know, Rob got his hand up pretty quick.
Sorry, I don't think that was what the earlier meeting said at all. I think what registrars are unhappy with is a staff interpretation that they want to publish about it. We negotiated that clause. I think registrars are pretty happy with it, and ICANN's pretty happy with it. What's happened is that they've come up with an interpretation of what they believe it means that we believe is incorrect. And so I think that's what the fuss in the meeting was, not that we're unhappy with the clause.
Cheryl, can I?
Okay, thanks for that. Fatimata, and if you do not speak French, I suggest you use your earphones.
Merci, Cheryl. Fatimata.
Thank you very much, Cheryl. I'm watching something significant regarding what Bob said. He said that the best solution to the registrants is working together with registrants so that we, in order for us to work with registrants, education is required, as you well said, and consequently, we need to understand what's going on. But education is a project in the meantime, and to understand at the at large level, we have always requested to all the texts, the agreements, and everything that to have a summary, a briefing, simple, in a plain language, to be understandable to all the parties, and to enable participation. During our meeting of yesterday, we stressed this item again, and I celebrate the translation into several languages. I agree, I'm happy for that, but we insist on this demand to have a summary, a briefing of the key aspects included in the documents in a simple and plain language to facilitate participation. Thank you very much.
If I can just follow up, because I think you were addressing me. The problem with that is these are very complex legal documents. And when you put out a summary, people could interpret that as the document that binds and applies. And in fact, I can assure you they do.
That's right.
As opposed to the actual contract. So, you know, we've seen it with ICANN staff trying to put out a summary that we believe is not correct. But it instantly gets quoted as soon as it's even published in draft form back to us as registrars as this is what you have to do as opposed to the original agreement. So I appreciate and understand your dilemma, but unfortunately I think it's very hard to summarize sometimes accurately in a way that tells people, look, you've got to refer to the original contract that takes a long time to negotiate and hammer out and is worded very specifically to ensure there's no misunderstanding.
Thank you, Rob. And, of course, we can perhaps do the user guide end of the spectrum. Someone is going to be very lucky to do something I rarely do, and I'm going to give the last word to someone else. Wow, indeed. Use this wisely, my dear. Use this wisely.
And it's going to be in French, just for fun.
Your version of French.
Pour le dernier.
I can have fun having the last word, you know, my dear lady. I find that the observation is very interesting, but I ask myself, I wonder to myself, is that the role of the registrants to do this kind of summaries, briefings? Would this have to imply or involve more extensive matters than the ones we are addressing directly here? So this is a really interesting matter, and it deserves to be stated, but I'm not sure if the registrant or the registrar is the ideal for this kind of requests.
perhaps affirmed to be in the next meeting in San Francisco if we can find the time in our agendas. Thank you, linesmen. Thank you, ball boys. Thank you very much, interpreters. We are nothing without you. Thank you, thank you, thank you, thank you, industry. Thank you, in users of domain names.